Siren Radio.
And away we go. Anna, relief is at hand because, rather like the troops who are being supplied in ordnance in the First World War, Phil Hamlin-Williams has made it to the studio. How are you, Phil?
I'm very well.
Good, excellent. So, and you're here to talk about a wonderful scenario which involves the words silhouettes, Melvin Pryor, and commemoration. That's all I'll say at this stage. Commemoration, Melvin Pryor, and silhouettes.
Keep them guessing.
Teasing. It's teasing ahead to that. Bayeux Tapestry, please, Anna, share with us about this little vision of history, a kind of early Brexit, you might say, attempt at Brexit, that, or maybe it was a kind of reunification. The last time, of course, the country was formally invaded. Would you like to share with us the tale of this from the Norman perspective?
Yes. Well, it's an amazing piece of artwork. And it's had a very interesting life as well, having been moved from pillar to post to keep it away from possible bombardment. But the most interesting thing is, I mean, it's put together using 8 different colours, and it looks very autumnal. But the most disturbing thing of all, and an academic has written about it, is there's a few characters on the tapestry who are not soldiers or kings or bishops, but naked people. And they're little silhouette-y type people at the bottom and at the top of the canvas. And they're just very, very peculiar. You know, my friend and I spent about half an hour trying to debate why these little naked figures appear on the Bayeux tapestry. And indeed, an academic has written a whole paper on the number of penises that you actually
see. Really? Really? That's astounding. Clearly that's what, you know, is a very critical part of the whole. Could they not just be early medieval streakers?
Well, apparently at some point the genitalia of the six, I think there are 6 human penises and 88 horse penises, which are depicted.
I mean, I can tell you've made a full study of this, Anna, and frankly, I mean, I just, you know, you've taken these links from London to a whole new field. I mean, I can already see Phil Hamlin-Williams jotting your name down in terms of, this is what we need more of, more analysis of genitalia at the drill hall. I won't even go there. I'll start digging all sorts of... heaven only knows what Julie Corden will be making of this, but still, we'll carry on. So, were you aware, actually, Kirsty, that there were naked people in the Bayeux Tapestry running around, exposing themselves?
I can't say I was aware, no.
That might have been why Harold, of course, took his eye off that. No, I'm going to. From your own point of view, Becky, is this news?
I don't even think I've ever seen it.
So where can Becky go to actually see the Bayeux Tapestry? Where did you
There are several... I mean, there's a lot about it online, and this whole penis exercise...
You're becoming obsessed with this, Anna.
It's online. But, I mean, it is an amazing historical record. And, you know, in the days where quite a number of people were illiterate, it makes it even more important that there was a record kept of the battle, and the detail in the actual battle scenes is amazing. You can see different types of weapons, different types of armour. You can distinguish the Saxons from the Normans due to their shields. And the incredible thing is, when you go in, you're not allowed to take photographs, which is a bit sad. But what they do have in there is lovely medieval music. So as you're going around, you wear a sort of headphone thing, or sort of a phone thing that talks you around. So the crowd is always moving, if you know what I mean. You have to literally walk through it.
Divided into 13 sections, of course. Within each section, a number of scenes exploring the story, starting off with Edward and Harold at Westminster, followed by Harold. I've looked through all of this, the mysterious lady, the prisoner, brothers at arms, the oath. Are you sure you haven't actually made this up about the naked people running through the whole system? Is it Bishop Odo appears in the battle? That's always quite exciting. Just a thought there. Kirsty, ever consider seeing the Bayeux Tapestry?
I have seen it. I saw it when I was very little, but I don't really remember.
Well, obviously traumatised by the sight of all of those various things.
Very traumatic.
Reading Museum, I believe, is the location to go to. Is that correct? Anna? Reading Museum?
Reading Museum. I think there's a copy of it somewhere.
There's a copy
yes,
at Reading. I'm just
yes,
thinking, because you had you didn't go and see it in Reading. You went to see it where?
No, so in Bayeux, in Normandy.
Exactly. So you see Bayeux Tapestry, go and see it in Bayeux. Go see it in Reading Museum. Phil, you look as though you're intrigued by this. Sort of putting up details and various other pieces. It's just a case of...
I'm just feeling anxious.
Yeah, I'm not surprised.
You know, yes, it was the last time this island was invaded.
Mm, mm.
But, of course, we must remember it very, very nearly became French in Lincoln in 1217.
You're so right, exactly.
And that we should never forget.
L'entente cordiale.
You know, think of the food, think of the wine.
Oof. Yes, exactly. Were you aware that you could have actually been part of the province of France and the Kingdom of France? Now you see there, Kirsty. No, you're shaking your head. Robert. Astounding. Let's move on to more, some might say, prosaic things. I would never say mundane, but exciting things in a different manner. Is that a plane going to fly overhead in Twickenham? Because you are quite close to Heathrow Airport. Well, that's Hounslow, really.
It's a strimmer, I think, rather than a plane.
It's a strimmer.
Flying overhead.
Exactly. You see, these London folk, they get everything, don't they? It's little wonder Becky came up here thinking, where are the flying strimmers? I mourn the loss of the flying strimmers. It's just there. Don't worry, Becky. Reading won't have a chance to get some flying strimmers there. We've talked about open days quite a lot, but I don't think we've ever had a Sunday open day. So would you like to explain, Kirsty, the significance and importance of an open day on a Sunday?
Yep, so we've been doing our research and we found out that people are just as interested in attending an open day on a Sunday as they are on a Saturday. So we are trialling it this Sunday and it's been really popular. Our numbers have been really good. We're looking at having around 4,000 people on campus, so it's been just as popular as the Saturdays.
Okay. Did you attend an open day, Becky, or was it a case of... I said no.
Yes.
You did?
Yes, I did, but I think it was on a Saturday.
Yeah. No, it couldn't have been a Saturday.
I mean, it wouldn't have been a Sunday,
time-jumping.
I'm just saying, I think
exactly.
It's a Saturday.
If you'd said I attended a Sunday open day, it wouldn't have been here. but it's interesting. Anna, what are your thoughts on this? Or do you think, well, that's what we've got now, 168 hours in the week, and we need to squeeze the work out of every single one of them?
Well, I think it's sensible, because it's such an effort. So, I mean, if you think people are going on open days, and they're travelling quite a long way to get there, and, you know, the last thing you need is to be shepherded around. My daughter went to an open day at UCL, and it was horrific. I mean, they were literally being herded around, and maybe by giving someone an extra day, it'll just even out the numbers. So I think it's a really good idea, yeah.
Of course, visitors can also, as I'm sure you'll confirm, Kirsty, check out the delights of the Lincoln Drill Hall, see some of the cultural aspects that are actually there, and see the big cathedral. They can just have a general wander through. I mean, that would be welcoming them, I would have thought, Phil.
Well, I would have thought they, if, depending on the timing of the open day, Evensong on a Sunday tends to be a highlight of the week at the cathedral.
There you are, you see. Exactly. Obviously, other institutions, other church services are available. We don't want to push too far
absolutely
down a particular line on that
absolutely
aspect, because who knows where that could take us. But it's an interesting line, very interesting line. Anna, any other questions you want to put to Kirsty while she's here? Because she flies away.
Yeah.
She flies away in about 15 minutes or so from now, just after we've actually spoken to William Coles about life and times. What's your official title, Kirsty, within the University of Lincoln?
I'm Senior Events Officer.
There you have it, you see. Your chance, Anna Lewis, to ask the senior events officer. That sounds...
I suppose the obvious question is, when you have these open days on a Sunday, what's the reaction you get from other members of staff who have to put themselves out to be there? Because some people do regard their Sundays as sacred. So is it a big effort
She's put a finger on a potential can of worms there, certainly. Never mind, you know. Any responses, Kirsty?
It's the same as the Saturday. They're just it's whether they've given us their Saturday and or they've given us our Sunday.
Speaking on behalf of my colleagues, we love the institution so much.
Yes,
frankly, we just we're always asking, what more can we give? What more can we give?
And
and we'd like to go that further distance. It's very important. It's quite positive of that. People interested, do they need to have registered? Can they turn up? What's the sort of strategy?
So people need to book on through the website. They can book on our website for this Sunday or the other events we've got coming up. So, we'd advise them to head there, and then we will send them details of where they go to register. And then we look forward to seeing them on the day. But there's... as well as encouraging them to attend their subject talks and the other general talks we have available on the university, we would, of course, encourage them to go and have a look around the city because it's where they're going to be living for 3 years.
Absolutely. And how long have you been in Lincoln, Kirsty?
I've been in Lincoln for 3 years.
3 years. Yeah. And have you come to know and appreciate it for the joyous capital it is?
Absolutely. It's a very lovely city.
Oh, this could have been French, you know, as Phil's just alluded to. It's wonderful. We will find out also the Royal Anglian Regiment, another three words which also tie into the Phil Hammond-Lindell's connection. It's opening up sort of various...
Just teasing them,
with
aren't you?
Silhouette, Melvin Pryor, and various other elements as well. But it's time for Becky. She's just reached that role of head girl, given that Ben hasn't made it in time. Becky, would you like to put those last two questions to Anna Lewis, please?
Yes, Anna, have you enjoyed your telephonic link with us here today?
I certainly have, thank you.
And would you be interested in joining us next week?
Oh, that would be lovely. Thank you very much for the invite.
Yeah, a little less nudity next time, Anna. I mean, I know you might sort of think, let it all hang out, but please, you know...
It's academic. Well, it's academic.
Maybe academic to you, but, you know, we just have to have a certain sensitivity here. To get you to know you well, it's Siren Radio, 16 and a half minutes past 5 o'clock. Is that the same time in Edinburgh, William Coles?
Yes, but though it's almost dark up here.
Yeah, you see, that's the thing. As you move further north and the nights start drawing in, it all becomes much more strange and weird.
William Coles, romantic novelist, political journalist, and regular midweek drive correspondent from the capital of Scotland, with or without his prehistoric shark's teeth.
As I said, strange and weird and peculiar. Kirsty's with us. William Kirsty, of course, senior events officer.
Kirsty senior, right.
Yeah, exactly. And Kirsty has been explaining all about the open day on Sunday, the first Sunday open day we've ever had at the University of Lincoln. It's going to be wonderful. And she's going to talk about bats now with Chris Packham. Isn't that exciting, Bill?
Yeah, they're protected species. You can't, if they're in your house, you can't get rid of them, you know. Mm.
You speak as though you've had some experience in terms of bats in the belfry. Is this true?
Yes, I know all about them. We rented a house once and there were all these bats, which terrified the children and some of the guests, not me though. But we were not allowed to do anything with them at all. Yeah. We couldn't. And then you'd go into your cupboard in the bedroom and there would be these bats hanging from the rail and that sort of thing. Mm.
So there you have it. Those are the kind of challenges Chris Packham is going to be faced with. It's all very well talking about these wonderful mammals that hang upside down as flying mice and such like, but you know, fundamentally, you know, have we got an issue here? What's Chris going to be speaking about?
So it's our annual event that Chris does for us. It is on the 31st of October, so it's our Halloween special event. Chris Packham, obviously, from Springwatch, will be attending. He will be giving this presentation along with people from Bats Protection, who will bring some bats along, and we'll also have owls there. And it's really just to tell people a bit more about tell them a bit more about bats and owls, obviously, mm-hmm. and also while obviously at Halloween there's this focus on them being scary kind of creatures to show that they're not really that scary. And
any vampires around?
Allowing
for the fact that in Lincoln on the same day, if my memory serves, Lucy Armit is going to be at the Lincoln Drill Hall talking about Frankenstein. I mean, I think, whoa, you know, it's just a clear the city, that sort of basis. Kira. Becky, you're looking a little bit... are you a bat fan?
No, I'm an owl fan. I love owls.
Well, is there going to be something for the owl fan there?
Absolutely,
as well?
Absolutely, yeah. Yes.
Well, there we are. And what's your view on owls, pray tell, William?
Oh, we love them. They're very keen on chomping up bats. We can't do anything with the bats, but the owls love to eat them. And then you can get their droppings with these little bat bones in, which they sort of... it's great. Yep, we're all for owls.
And that's what you call the rhythm of life in so many ways. You know, you got a problem with your bats, bring in the owls, they'll sort it out. Have it. Sorry, it's just a little line there. Phil, any thoughts on bats, owls, or would it a case of no? I must go on and celebrate 200 years of Mary Shelley and Frankenstein.
No, I have a wonderful memory of bats. Where the house we used to live in Leicestershire, we often used to sit outside of a summer's evening, as they say, and we would count up to 50 bats coming out of the eaves of the roof.
Hmm.
It was a glorious sight.
Yeah. If not, a wee bit scary, perhaps.
No. They're lovely.
Well, I suppose they have a bit of bad press, and I know that Chris can be relied upon to give them a decent press and actually open things up and realise that they're more than just the symbol for scaring criminals in a 1938 comic magazine produced by Bill Finger and Bob Kane. Referring to Batman, of course. I could say, what? Bill Finger, Bob Kane, the creators, 1938, 80 years old, looking pretty good, I have to say. Okay, Crusader, as indeed is Superman. Bill, whatever you'd like to be called this week, what questions would you like to put to either Phil Hamlin-Williams? And in fact, we might be able to... I think we should reveal, actually, this commemoration of Lincoln in World War One, a night of commemoration on Thursday, October the 18th. There, I've said it. Would you like to take it a couple of stages further, please? Bill Coles with the awesome Phil Hamlin-Williams, fresh from the Lincoln Book Festival, and now already gearing up for Lincoln in World War One, a night of commemoration with Melvin Pryor, Silhouettes, and more.
Yeah, tell us about it. What is going on?
Okay, so I wanted in some way to draw together the strands of World War One so far as it concerned the city. On the 11th of November, obviously, we will be remembering the fallen. But before then, and indeed separate to that, I wanted to draw together what the people of Lincoln actually did in those 4 years. And they did something really remarkable. They both invented and made the tank. Now, we know the tank as an horrific object of war, but it was created to protect the young men who were falling in their thousands to German machine guns. And that creative work was done here in Lincoln. So I wanted people to remember that, but I wanted them to remember it alongside what our engineers were doing in the manufacture of aircraft. But also the other things. In Lincoln Drill Hall itself, the 4th Battalion of the Lincolnshire Regiment mustered before they went off to war, and Lincoln Christ Hospital treated some 40,000 wounded soldiers during those 4 years. So it had a significant impact on this city.
So your gig in October, later this month, is a celebration of the tank, then?
Well, the tank, but also it's really a celebration of Lincolnshire engineers and the men and women who worked there.
Why was it Lincolnshire rather than anywhere else that all this action was going on?
Well, I think that is a really good point. The heavy engineers, people like Vickers and Armstrong, they were building ships, but they were making massive guns. In places like Coventry and Chilwell, just outside Nottingham, they were filling shells, which were fired, in their millions on the Western Front. So all these guys were busy. So for a new development, they needed to go somewhere that wasn't already hugely busy with war manufacturing, but which also had the skills. And the one thing Lincoln engineers knew a lot about was mud. And there was a lot of mud on the Western Front. Lincolnshire engineers knew how to propel vehicles through this brown, sticky substance.
So they were the mud kings?
They were the mud kings, absolutely.
The Flanders and Swan of the era in many ways. Mud, mud, glorious mud. Friday the 2nd of November, or if you'll permit me as well, Phil, an interesting line here. We were promoting yesterday with our friends from the new Theatre Royal Lincoln. And in fact, you can hear this on a programme we're doing tomorrow night, just after 7 o'clock. Keep the Home Fires Burning, a commemoration of the music of the World War I Centenary Tour. I did say it wasn't as though you needed a sequel in World War II, but it's interesting again to get flavours.
Yeah, there are loads of different flavours to this, absolutely.
Does that appeal to yourself, Becky? The tank.
That was actually one of the only things I knew about Lincoln.
Tanks.
It was the first thing that came up.
I'm
when
going
I
to study
it.
Higher education in the place tanks. That came up with tanks.
They also have the sort of like, not memorial, but the by the roundabout,
yes,
by McDonald's.
Yes, they do. Yeah, other fast food joints are available, but you're absolutely right. Yes, by that very place. And it's where they'd want it. I mean, let's face it, for those engineers, they would have liked to have had a memorial on a roundabout by a fast food outlet.
I'm certain they could have liked nothing better.
Exactly.
There is actually a better memorial. Back in 2016, we had a most marvellous musical production in the grounds of the castle called Greenfields Beyond. Which was the story of the men and women, mainly women actually, who made these tanks. And we're going to be showing it on the 18th of October. And it really is, it's a lovely production.
It's going to be fantastic. We haven't even mentioned the silhouettes as yet. Talk about that
later.
We'll
talk about them later.
Exactly. Can't give too much away. It's almost time to say farewell to Kirsty. Because Julie Corden's saying, come back, Kirsty, come back now. You can't do the whole sort of show. Who do you think you are? It's a different line. So anything else you'd like to sort of share with Bill, the listener, ourselves, about the Open Day, Chris Packham, or anything else that's around?
Just that they're fantastic opportunities to come and find out about the university and also about Bats and Owls. So we'd love to see you there. So please
Bats,
do.
Bats, Owls and Academics. The title of a book I'm working on.
Yeah.
Never mind then. Boa. Kirsty, it's been wonderful connecting with you. Good self. See you again very soon.
Yes, I'll be back next week.
You see, yep. That's how soon. That's how soon. Whoosh! That's the kind of thing that would makes your team. Ian Richards would be proud. You know, I can sense. You sense the Ian Richards pride, can't you?
Absolutely.
There, sort of through. Becky did this so well last time around. I think you could do the same again with Bill Coles. Go, Becky.
Bill, have you enjoyed your telephonic link with us here today?
Yeah, I've loved it. I always love it. It's been interesting and engaging.
And will you be interested in coming back soon?
Yes, I mean, as soon as boss asks me, if I'm on next week, I will be in New York City.
Yay! So actually, it'd be 1 p.m. your time, if I'm pretty much, or 12 noon, it'd be round about that sort of time. So we will connect with you from the Big Apple, and presumably finding out what life is like in what we like to refer to as Trumpton. You would not believe your eyes if 10 million fireflies lit up the world as I fell asleep. 'Cause they fill the open air and leave teardrops everywhere. You'd think me rude, but I would just stand and stare. I'd like to make myself believe that planet Earth turns slowly. It's hard to say that I'd rather stay awake when I'm asleep. 'Cause everything is never as it seems. 'Cause I get 1,000 hugs from 10,000 lightning bugs as they tried to teach me how to dance. A foxtrot above my head, a sock hop beneath my bed, a disco ball is just hanging by a thread. Last few years we've had hashtag Time's Up, we've had hashtag Me Too, and quite rightly so. Hopefully we're seeing a change in people's attitudes and the relationship between the genders and so on, with victims being encouraged to speak out and ideally being believed from that point of view. We're very pleased now to be able to welcome an author, a journalist, a general all-round wonderful person who is actually written from personal experience, regretfully. That's the wonderful Jenny Ensor. Jenny, welcome to the programme, and obviously congratulations on The Girl in His Eyes. A very difficult text, I think, to write, I would have thought.
Yes, thank you very much, Alex. Yeah, it was. I wrote it 19 years ago. Well, I started to write it 19 years ago. And at the time, I was having a bit of a mental health crisis. And although it was very difficult, it did, in a way, it did put me on the path to recovering from a really, really difficult time. So, and I also, but it was difficult because I was writing about some things, although it's not based on my life, some of the characters are very much close to what happened to me. And because it deals with abuse, it was difficult to actually go there and to sort of confront some of the things in my past.
I mean, the truly abhorrent nature of any human being abusing another human being, age is irrelevant, but it's even more pertinent when you actually have the situation where it's in a family situation. Are we learning the message? I mean, do you think, as I say, you wrote this with a view of hopefully kind of inspiring people to maybe speak to somebody or address this? Or is it a case of sometimes we think, we're never going to learn. We've just got a big issue here. You know, people are just not listening.
Well, I do think there's, unfortunately, there's so many, mostly men, I think they tend to be men, who... there's some sort of terrible compulsion to, I think it's all about power, to really abuse their power over women or children. It's women and children, especially when it's in a family. Mm. And when it was abusive, my father, I think it was so much about power and his just very strange needs. And it commonly is about... exerting some sort of power.
Historically, I mean, we go back to the patriarchal age and eras of the Victorian era and so on, where clearly we had a different sort of dominant character from that line and era. It's the misuse of power. I mean, I think you're absolutely right. We talked with Phil Dearness over in Los Angeles, who has his own views with respect to the challenges people have been faced with there. But it's all about that abuse of power and dominant relationships. I mean, it seems to be we have in the studio two fine folk who obviously share the sort of area of that. First of all, one of our undergraduate students, who I think, again, you found it sort of quite a powerful tale and an aspect from that point of view. That's Becky Morgan Phillips. Becky, any thoughts that you want to share at present with Jenny?
I was just saying before we came back on, it's a very interesting and powerful sort of story that you've written, and the aspect of it being the girl who was abused trying to then help this other girl who she feels is going to be abused is an interesting dynamic to explore, and I think it makes for a very great book.
Yes, thank you very much. That was really the central dilemma, and that I wanted to. It was really because a book is about this young woman's struggle to stand up to her father, and it's all initiated when she starts to suspect that he may be taking this 12-year-old girl swimming. And before that point, even though he's abused her in the past, she's never really considered that he might turn on to someone else. He might be tempted by someone else. And I just wanted to bring out all the problems that she has, the great difficulty like of betraying betraying in a sense her family, her father, her mother, who's never really known about this, but apart from perhaps really almost unconsciously she has suspected something, but to actually to face the truth about her husband is incredibly difficult. And also in the book, Laura's father is extremely rage prone and manipulative, and so there's that. It's what might he do to her, to his daughter, and also what the impact on Laura's mum, because her mum is quite frail in some ways.
Phil Hamlin-Williams, you coordinated at the Lincoln Book Festival. It's all about the theme of revolution this year, and clearly you also talked about suffragettes and the movements from that. Do you think messages that come across, I mean, as in the girl in his eyes, that sort of thing, we are heading into a more civilised era? I mean, what are your own thoughts on this?
I just don't think we are. Mm. It strikes me, and I haven't read the book, but in thinking of the scenario, I think often we are finding men who are not powerful outside a situation where they're with someone who is vulnerable, which is in no sense forgiving them, but it is possibly trying to understand what's happening. I don't know whether this is the case here, that these are people who in the rest of their life cannot exert power, but once they get home they can, which is awful. But possibly helps us to understand. And, of course, that situation will never change.
And is it also a kind of mental illness? I mean, clearly you've specialised in work and research in terms of the First World War, the Second World War, the post-traumatic stress disorder and the lines that come through with that, that somehow in kind of coping with the stresses of that, you kind of lash out at all manner of sort of issues.
Absolutely. You know, within that situation, you certainly found men coming back from both wars terribly wounded mentally. And, of course, you have the stories particularly of schoolmasters who would be really very aggressive to their pupils. Not because it was in their nature, but because it was part of what they had experienced.
Jenny, do you say, I mean, Phil providing some might say a realistic perspective on the situation though. I mean, Jenny, do you sense that, I mean, you mentioned the Time's Up movement, the Me Too movement and so on. Do you think that this sea change is actually occurring, that we're realising that we are all human beings and we need to have respect, and it is the R word, right across the base, no matter age-based, gender-based, whatever that is?
I think it is a sea change, and it's particularly for women, who are able to feel that they can speak out more about things which terrible things which have happened to them in the past, and also there's a huge change within schools. I understand that there is much more awareness of teachers talking to children about the dangers, but it still seems to me that there's much more we could do to help potential offenders or potential abusers, which isn't really happening at the moment for whatever reason. And there's so much in society, there's so much like demonization of paedophiles, it's almost counterproductive, because it makes them go underground, and it doesn't really start to, I don't know, it doesn't seem to be very helpful in stopping child abuse.
That's really pertinent and poignant. Let's talk a little bit about the Truth Project. I mean, from your own sort of, just talk a little bit more about what the Truth Project is, and how, you know, clearly encouraging folk to speak out about abuse is something which, you know, we want to encourage again, without necessarily having the sort of additional challenges that's faced with.
Yeah, well, it's a really large project, and they're encouraging anyone who was abused sexually as a child to come forward, whether it was in the home or at school or in some other institution, and to really talk. You can talk anonymously, or you can give your name if you want to, and they record it all. That I went through this last week, and they do it really, really carefully and in a very respectful, sensitive way. And you can basically say whatever you need to say about the abuse and the impact on you, and it's a way, it's very validating in a sense, and it's all part of the government's inquiry into child sexual abuse. And they're doing research, they're making the accounts anonymous, and then they're using what people say in research to try to stop child abuse in the future, or to minimize it.
Becky, anything you want to add at this stage? Any thoughts?
I think that project especially is very, very good, because if you just look at big cases, for example, and this is a couple of years ago now, but the whole thing where everything with Jimmy Savile started coming out, people had waited years, decades to come out about their trauma and have had to live with it for that entire time. But projects like this can help people, even anonymously, can help people connect with others who are going through the same thing or who have been through the same thing, and perhaps start to heal from their trauma and from their experiences. And I just think that's a very good project to be a part of.
The name of the book, written by Jenny Enser, The Girl in His Eyes, difficult read. I think it's a dark psychological family drama. It is available now, published by Bloodhound Books. You can find the details online. Jenny, thank you for sharing this evening, and we wish you all the very best. I mean, in terms of journalism, when you did the Master Journalism, was this part of your line of what you wanted to, again, journalism as telling the truth? Was that very much at the heart of your career choice?
Yeah, so I think because I had so many years as a child keeping quiet about things, abuse that happened to me, that I was always really driven to try to reveal things which are kept quiet in whatever way, like in society in general, things like forced marriage and issues to do with the environment, all sorts of things like that. And I have, writing this novel, I haven't done much journalism relating to this, but I wanted to find a way of exploring all the issues and giving an insight in what it's like to be in a family where there is sexual abuse. And also, by the way, the book, people have been saying how much, some people have said it's made them cry, it's made them very angry, and it's like one of the most emotional books they've ever read. So I think there's a... It has. I'm amazed at the reactions I'm getting.
Yeah, I think it's rightly so. As I say, it's published by Bloodhound Books, available from bookshops and online, of course. The Girl in His Eyes by Jenny Ensor. Jenny, thank you for being part of the show today, and we'll hopefully speak again in the not too distant future.
Thank
Take care
much.
Now.